It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Woo-hoo is right. It is hump day. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. We're going to have some really important conversations today. We'll go through some headlines. We'll be talking with Don Watkins. He is the Director of Education for the Center for Industrial Progress, and we'll be talking about carbon taxes and why a number of economists are wrong on carbon taxes. So that's a very important conversation. And then we'll be chatting with Congressman Ken Buck. He is on the House Judiciary Committee, and it looks like today they might be getting some impeachment information in front of them. We want to hear what he has to say about that. So, yeah, be sure and listen to the whole show because it's going to be a very important show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com. It's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And you can email me with any comments. Love hearing from you at kim@kimmunson.com. And also sign up for our weekly email updates. We will keep you apprised of what is happening. And you can do that, obviously, at kimmunson.com. And as we look at these issues, it's freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And ultimately, socialism comes down to force. There's this narrative, this romance that's going on in America today, romancing socialism. But if something is a really good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. And we are continuing, particularly here in Colorado, seeing the continual socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, water, communications, and data. These are all things that when there's a free market to those, they thrive, they prosper. You get government involved, the supply goes down, the price goes up, and the quality goes down. And that's why we must fight against this whole narrative of socialism. And I want to thank the team, Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for your great work. I really appreciate you. And each of you listeners, thank you. You have a purpose. Today, strive for excellence, take care of heart, soul, mind, and body, and you are valued. So, first of all, Steve?
Of all the people you just mentioned, since I'm the only one who has access to a microphone, on their behalf, may I say thank you for leading.
Well, thank you. It is a great team. As I go through my gratitude journal, I am thankful for each of you and the opportunity that we have every morning, and then this is replayed. The show's replayed from 10 to 11 p.m. All the show recaps are on my website. But it is a privilege to get to do this, and it's a privilege to get to work with all of you, Steve. So thank you so much. I was thinking about carbon tax, climate change, you know, this narrative that scientists, you know, agree that the climate is changing. Well, you know what? It's called weather. And this whole idea of man-made climate change, I think, is something to actually let PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties figure out ways to regulate our lives, mandate things, and get more money out of our pockets. I was thinking about scientists, famous scientists. Well, how about Galileo, Steve? What do you think about that? He's pretty famous. He was an Italian scientist and scholar whose inventions included the telescope. His discoveries laid the foundation for modern physics and astronomy. He was an Italian astronomer. A mathematician, physicist, philosopher, and professor. You say all those things early in the morning in a row, who made pioneering observations of nature with long-lasting implications for the study of physics. He also constructed a telescope and supported the Copernican theory, which supports a sun-centered solar system. Galileo was accused twice of heresy by the church for his beliefs and wrote a number of books on his ideas. And he lived from 1564 to 1642. Okay, Steve, here is his words of inspiration and wisdom. I do not feel obliged to believe that the same God who has endowed us with sense, reason, and intellect has intended us to forego their use. That was That was a long time ago. So human nature doesn't really change. And these gifts that we have been given, we need to make sure that we use them, Steve. And I know that you do that every day, right?
That's debatable, but the will is always there. Well, the end result is up for debate. Go ahead.
But we strive for that. So our funnies, again, scientist-based. Are you ready for these?
Yes.
What did one lab rat say to the other? He said, I've got my scientist so well trained that every time I push the buzzer, he brings me a snack. Number two, they have just found the gene for shyness. They would have found it earlier, but it was hiding behind two other genes. And lastly, Steve, why can you never trust atoms? Because they make up everything.
Okay, moving on.
Okay, just a few things, a few upcoming events that I wanted you all to be aware of. First of all, you know, Hooters Restaurants and is one of my partners. Truly, I'm an entrepreneur. I buy my time for my radio stations, which gives me full editorial control as long as I think I pretty much behave myself on that. So Hooters Restaurants is one of my partners. And Hooters Restaurants and Little Ricci's New York Pizzeria Stores are once again raising money for Realities for Children Charities, their Bikes for Tykes program. And they provide Bikes for Tykes provides helmets and bicycles to local children who have been abused, neglected, or at risk for abuse and neglect. And this is a great cause that benefits children locally from Colorado Springs to Northern Colorado. And most importantly, 100% of all donated funds will go to the kids. Not one dime is used for administrative purposes. And so they're having a Santa's Little Helper pageant December 13th at their Hooters restaurant up in Loveland. It's going to be a great event. They could use help with with silent auction items. Certainly cash donations are great. So if you are interested in helping them out, you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com, and I will get you all connected. Then secondly, right after Christmas, January 8th is the first day of the legislative session. And we need to let these politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, these PBIs, know that we are watching. So we are organizing our Stand for Colorado 2020 rally. It'll be on January 8th, 11 o'clock, on the west steps of the Capitol. I know that's middle of the day. I know it's on a Wednesday. But hopefully you can start to plan so that you can be there, because we need to let them know that we are watching. So if you want more information, again, you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And then thirdly, we're starting the Salon Series in 2020. Very excited. Helen Raleigh and Dr. Paul Prentice, and, you know, Helen immigrated from China. She is a fervent supporter of the American idea, capitalism, freedom, liberty. And she and Dr. Paul Prentice have put together an event, The Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism. And that's going to be Monday, January 13th, 5 to 8 p.m. at Water's Edge Winery there in Centennial. The cost is $20, and then you also just purchase whatever you want to eat and drink. So if you'd like to get on the RSVP list, email me at kim@kimmunson.com. It's going to be a really, really good event. Steve, what do you think about that?
Well, I was sitting here thinking of platitudes for Helen Raleigh in terms of what makes her such an interesting person to be around. Obviously, like you just said, she was born and initially raised in China. She's lived under that system. She was able to come to the U.S. and immigrate the right way, and has experienced everything that there is to experience going through that process. And like you said, she's a fervent supporter of the American idea. Well, who else would be more a better example of someone coming to understand the American idea?
Well, I think the event is going to sell out, so be sure and email me at kim@kimmunson.com to get on the RSVP list, because it's going to be a really interesting evening. So, Steve, let's move over to some headlines quickly. First of all, you just giggle on the Joe Biden, the No Malarkey tour.
Well, while the show open was going, I was furiously writing down all the things to discuss if you want to talk about the Democrats. And
yeah, let's do a little bit. I mean, it's just a little wild. First of all, Joe Biden, the No Malarkey tour, that's the best they can come up with. That's their vision for America, is no malarkey.
Well,
I mean, come on.
Our, you know, the guy who heads up this industry in terms of conservative talk is, you know, I would say Rush Limbaugh. And Monday he was just deconstructing this No Malarkey tour in terms of who named it. Who thought this was a good idea? Because, you know, it's, you know, when it comes to Biden, it's almost nothing but malarkey. So, yeah, not a good idea. And I haven't heard anybody else who thinks, oh, well, that's clever. No, they're all scratching their heads and saying, what in the world are you up to, Joe Biden? But now he's talking about his hairy legs, and he has talk about not having a message.
And meanwhile, over on in the Trump camp, we are seeing a poll that is putting approval of black voters of President Trump in the 30 to 35% range. If that happens, that is speaks very well for Trump being reelected. And just a point, as we I know we're going to be enjoying December, you know, time with our families, preparation for Christmas and New Year's, Hanukkah, and, you know, all that the holiday season involves, which is great. Wonderful blessings on that. But 2020 is going to be one of the most important elections in the history of America. So we need to have our brains around these ideas, and we need to engage with our friends and our colleagues and our children and our neighbors about what is really going on in America. And the fact that they are going after Donald Trump the way they are, and I know he's not a perfect person, but quite frankly, you know, people talk about his tweets in the past. If he was still doing that kind of stuff, Steve, I mean, that would be all over. That would be all over the newspapers. And, you know, we all make mistakes in the past. And we, you know, as Christians, we believe in redemption and change. And what he, you know, so let's move this over and take a look at what he's doing for the country. You know, the GDP growth, the economy is growing. Unemployment is at record lows. The stock market, when you look at the big picture, is doing well. We'll talk to Jason McBride at the half hour about all of that. But, you know, when you really look at the economic well-being of everyday hardworking Americans, and he's, you know, it's across the board, a rising tide raises all boats. And so the Democrats have been moving to try to put people into groups instead of looking at them as the individual. The American idea is that the rights of the individual of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness are protected. And when we say, what could happen if we do that? You have America, and you do not have caravans. You do not have people trying to get into Venezuela or into Cuba. You know, these caravans are coming to America because of freedom. So, my friends, we have to engage in this battle of ideas, and we have to encourage people to show up to vote. Many times we have veterans, we have Christians that don't vote. And if you're ever going to vote, this is one of the most important elections in our history, and that's going to be the election of 2020. There's going to be some things on the Colorado ballot as well. And so, once again, engage in the battle of ideas. Make the case for freedom. Make the case for liberty. Make the case for the American idea. And when you do that, that makes the case to vote for Donald Trump. And engage in that, because this is one of the most important elections in the history of America. Steve, your quick comment, and then we'll go to break.
Well, time is pushing us around here. We need to come back to my list tomorrow here, since I have so many things written on it, because it's great, great discussion. So let's move on.
Okay, we will do that then. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Don Watkins. He is the Director of Education for the Center for Industrial Progress, and he works with Alex Epstein. You probably know Alex Epstein wrote the very important book, The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels. And they had done a power hour regarding a variety of different subjects, but one of them was a carbon tax. And I thought it was important that we understand that. And so this will be our Health and Hydrocarbon Show. It's brought to us by Liberty Oilfield Services. Greatly appreciate that. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll chat with Don Watkins with the Center for Industrial Progress.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Bud or Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in home ownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we are going to be having a conversation shortly with Don Watkins. Before we do that, though, Steve, you had a couple of things that you wanted to mention regarding the Democrat presidential candidates.
Well, as probably everyone knows by now, Kamala Harris backed out yesterday of the making the run for the president's office. And, you know, it just what bothers me the most is she just can't say, okay, we tried and, you know, we gave it our best shot and gracefully bow out. She has to blame it on, well, it's my race, it's my gender, and it's just so nauseating.
Well, you know, it's always making excuses. It's part of that whole victimhood thing. And certainly it looks like the whole field is in a bit of disarray. Because, you know, their message, there's no clear message. Their message is just going after Donald Trump and then giving away all kinds of free stuff. I think as people realize what that message is, you know, it just really doesn't work out. So let's continue the conversation regarding that tomorrow. We have on the line with us Don Watkins. He is with the Center for Industrial Progress. That is the group that he works with Alex Epstein. In fact, he was the editor for the book on the moral case for fossil fuels. So, Don Watkins, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Keep an eye on, first of all, let's just very quickly, again, talk about the moral case for fossil fuels. Fossil fuels have actually helped more people out of poverty because it's freed up, particularly women. So women in third world countries, they have to worry about gathering biofuels. It might be dung, it might be wood, sticks, or whatever, to have fires to cook their food, to keep them warm. They have to go and get water. So fossil fuels have actually really helped women, and it's really helped a bunch of people out of poverty. So explain that a little bit more, Don Watkins.
Well, I mean, I think it's wider than that. It helped humanity out of poverty, because we have to remember, before the advent of power that was under our control and that was scalable and could power machines to run a whole civilization, everybody was poor. Even the so-called rich were poor, that they had very short lives. You didn't have anything like the modern conveniences, including just access to food and water that we take for granted today. And that is because abundance depends on being able to cheaply and affordably power machines. And that is very hard to do. And in fact, we've found very few fuels capable of doing it, and nothing that's able to rival fossil fuels in terms of things like abundance, scalability, that is, that, you know, you can actually use it to power the lives of billions of people, and certainly affordability, that is, having power that people can actually afford to use. And so unless you had a substitute for that, you could not have the kind of abundance that we have today. And nothing can compete with it. The closest that we have are things like nuclear power that can only fulfill, you know, the needs of electricity, which is one part of our power usage. And even that's opposed by environmentalists. So that's the essence of the positives of fossil fuels. And then the basic argument of the moral case of fossil fuels is that if we look carefully at the negatives and side effects of fossil fuels, they're real, but they're totally swamped and outweighed by the positives.
Because there's nothing that's perfect in this world, Don. So we have to take a look at, you know, the benefits and the costs on that. And so what fossil fuels have done for everyday hardworking people across the globe is absolutely amazing. And you see that the people in third world countries, they don't want to continue. I mean, generally, they would like to have their lives be better instead of having to focus on, you know, trying to, you know, find biofuels and go get their water. They would love to be able to thrive and prosper and move up the economic ladder like we have in all the first world countries. But instead, it seems like we have a lot of PBIs, I call them politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, that want to tap down this ability for human flourishing, human prosperity, by trying to tap down these our fossil fuels. And one of the ways to do that is carbon taxes. So you recently were on a Power Hour and talking about carbon taxes. So explain that to our listeners, Don.
Yes, I mean, like you said, there's this phenomenon that, you know, we take for granted all the positives of fossil fuels and regard it as easily replaceable and only talk about the negatives. So it's not even that people say, oh, we don't care about energy poverty. It's that it doesn't even occur to them to think of it. You know, we read 100 articles on polar bears, and I'm a fan of polar bears, but do we ever hear in the New York Times or the Washington Post or even the Wall Street Journal about energy poverty? Not very often, because we're so just focused on this idea that that the worst thing we could be doing is impacting the planet. And we forget about powering the lives of human beings on the planet. And so if you have this view of we're only going to focus on the negatives of fossil fuels and take them for granted, and you're only looking at the side effects, then obviously you're going to be, how can we get people to stop using fossil fuels? And so, you know, there's a lot of policies on the table for that, from fracking bans to the Green New Deal. But probably, I think, one of the most popular, and it tends to be popular among both liberals and conservatives, is the idea of a carbon tax. And essentially what that means, it's really a tax on CO2. And what it means is that there's different plans, but ultimately the idea is that certain users, consumers, or producers of CO2 for any given amount are charged a tax. And what you're doing then is you're taxing energy. And the fundamental problem with this is that because energy is the industry that powers every other industry, if you're making energy more expensive, you're making everything else in our lives more expensive. So if you're thinking about, like, what's the thing you most want to avoid doing, is making energy expensive, because that is going to dramatically lower your standard of living across the board. Even if we grant the starting point, which I don't necessarily grant, which is that we should be trying to get off fossil fuels in the first place.
Well, and I just really cannot understand that, because and you said something that I hadn't not really thought a lot about, but it is so important. You said we take for granted all the benefits of what fossil fuels do for our lives and only focus on the negatives. And one has to ask why. You know, many of these, and you mentioned it's both people across the political spectrum that are talking about a carbon tax. And ultimately, a carbon tax, somebody's going to make money on this. So I submit to you on this, possibly follow the money. What would your comment be on that, Don?
Well, I mean, I think there's something to that, but I don't think it's the fundamental thing, because often you get people sincerely trying to figure out, all right, well, what are the ways in which we could use the tax money so that it didn't hurt the economy? And what you often hear talked about is this idea of a revenue neutral tax, which means we are going to not increase the total burden of taxes. You know, we'll reduce some and instead replace it with a carbon tax. But revenue neutral is extraordinarily misleading, because if you think about what is supposed to happen, what's supposed to happen is fossil fuel energy becomes more expensive. So people are going to use other forms of energy, more expensive than the energy that they use today. And that means that those taxes aren't being paid to the government. You know, if you're using more wind or more biofuels, you're not paying that carbon tax. You're just paying more for energy. And so what happens is, to the extent the carbon tax is successful, people are just paying more and they're not getting any of these taxes returned to them in any way whatsoever. They're not paying the tax. They're just paying more an indirect tax in the form of expensive energy. And if you think about what you're really missing out, though, on, is you're missing out on all the projects, the productive projects that people would have taken part in if energy was less expensive. So at the margin, there's going to be businesses that don't get started. There's going to be projects that aren't undertaken. There's going to be businesses that close down and people that are laid off in order to deal with these higher costs. And none of that can, quote, you know, be returned by any of these tax plans. So, yeah, you can follow the money, but what you really see is that this is a pointless destruction of wealth instead of an actual rational plan for coping with climate challenges, which, you know, we can talk about, because that is a real question of what do you do in the face of climate challenges, given that climate is inherently, you know, threatening and is always changing. So whatever we think of the magnitude of the changes to come, we want to be cognizant of that, and then we can think, is a carbon tax good? And I would argue that it actually makes it harder for us to deal with climate challenges, let alone prosper more broadly.
Okay. Well, hey, Don Watkins, we're going to go to break here. And before we do that, we'll talk with Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. So if you'd please hold through the break, that would just be terrific, because I want to continue to talk about this carbon tax. You know, and typically when you tax something, the idea is that the PBIs, the politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties say that people will use less of that. And like you say, move people over to other energy sources. But it's not revenue neutral either. When you mention that they may look at it on paper that it's revenue neutral, but there's all these unintended consequences that you're talking about, it taps down creativity, innovation, the ability for everyday people to go out and go after their hopes and dreams. I think we need to talk about that a little bit more, because I think you and I both believe in, you know, certainly being responsible stewards of our earth. But we also believe in human flourishing and humans being able to prosper. So, Don, if you'll hold through the break, we'll be back to you in just a few minutes.
Absolutely.
And Jason McBride, the market took a whopping yesterday, didn't it?
Well, it got beat up a little bit, but it came back throughout the day, Kim. And actually, most of the indexes closed right at their highest point for the whole day. It looks like we're going to get a little bit of a boost, at least on the open this morning. So, you know, it's funny when the Dow's at 28,000 and you get a 400-point drop, it just really isn't the same as when it was at 11 or 12,000. It
right.
looks kind of breathtaking, but when you look at the percentages, yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of an eye-opener, 400 points, but it's still not you know, a total rear end kicking like it used to have been.
Well, and is this all because of Trump saying that perhaps the China, you know, trade talks may go in, and go into 2020 and after? Do you think that's what it was? Because the market gets kind of wonky about that.
Yeah, the trade headlines certainly have some effect on the market. I think that was most of it. The threat of additional tariffs on Brazil and Argentina as well. But yeah, when people are thinking we might get a deal with China before the end of the year, and then Trump says, I really don't care if we wait till after the election, the market kind of has a little temper tantrum, but it looks like it's getting over it quicker than your average two-year-old.
Well, that's or your average teenager. And one other thing, you know, last week we did something really fun, and you put together and spent a lot of time on it, on these turkey stocks and the stocks that have acted like turkeys in 2020. There's a great, a deliverable that you did on that. And so just tell us a little bit more about that, and then we'll go to break.
Well, you described it pretty well, Kim, except it's 2019.
What did I say, 20?
You did. You're getting a little ahead of yourself, but I'm not Nostradamus, you know.
I thought that you were, but...
Yeah, they're just stocks that either were very disappointing in their 2019 performance or stocks that just got beat up really bad in 2019. Some of them may stay turkeys forever, but you never know. There may be a couple that'll turn into eagles eventually. So I'd encourage folks to download the report. You could do that at your website, Kim, kimmonson.com. You can go to ours, airpresidential.com, or, as you like to say, give Natalie a call. She'll be at the boards at 7:30. That's 303-694-1600. And again, Kim, you can just download it or gosh almighty, we'll send it to you the old-fashioned way. We'll just mail you out a hard copy if you like.
Well, I found it absolutely fascinating, and I love that kind of stuff. So would highly recommend folks get a copy of your turkey stocks for 2019. So Jason McBride, thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Have a great show, Kim.
We'll do. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Don Watkins. He is the Director of Education at the Center for Industrial Progress. Talking about these carbon taxes, which you're seeing folks on both sides of the aisle talk about it. And actually, I think we'd like to lower taxes, and we would like to lower regulations, and we would like to do things to help everyday people thrive and prosper, of course, doing that as being good stewards of our earth. So we'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we are having a very important conversation with Don Watkins, who is with the Center for Industrial Progress. He was the editor for Alex Epstein's book, The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels, very important book. And this show, I want to say thank you to Liberty Oilfield Services. They are the sponsor of this show, and it's so important that we continue to work to understand these different issues, because affordable, reliable, efficient energy helps everyday people, you know, live successful lives. It helps them be able to start businesses and go after their hopes and dreams. And a carbon tax would really shut that down. So, Don, we were talking about revenue neutral, and these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties say, oh, a carbon tax could be revenue neutral, but they don't take into all of these other things that you mentioned, kind of the destructive component of a carbon tax. So could you elaborate more on that, please?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing that you're concerned with is not being revenue neutral. What you want, or certainly what I'm concerned with, is how do we have, you know, the best outcome for human beings? And as I mentioned, all you're doing with a carbon tax is making energy more expensive, and some of that tax might get returned to people, though not necessarily the people who paid it in the first place. And then you think, well, what would actually be required in order to deal with any climate challenges? And the number one thing that you want is you want capability. So, I mean, if you've looked at the trajectory of climate-related deaths, one of the things we've talked about in past episodes of the show is that climate-related deaths have fallen by 98% over the last 100 years, and that's because of increasing capability. And if you break that down by country, most of the reductions in climate-related deaths come from the wealthier countries that have more money, more technology, more capability to deal with those challenges. And so if you think, what is the number one thing that we want in the future? We want as much capability as possible. So we want as much economic growth. And anything that takes away from that is actually going to make us less able to deal with things in the future. So instead of having this tax, which, by the way, would not even effectively cut our use of fossil fuels, even by the very models that people appeal to justify the carbon taxes, they're just not going to lower CO2 emissions enough. The number one thing that we actually need to deal with whatever climate challenges we face in the future is we want to be as rich as possible, and we want other countries to be as rich as possible. So that should really be the question on the table of how do we have as much progress for humanity as possible, because, you know, if we were 10 times richer, we could easily afford to adapt, you know, building things like seawalls or sturdier buildings, or, you know, even have, you know, migration over the course of a century. And so that's really my concern. And carbon tax is going to make that much more difficult.
Well, and as everyday people have to pay more for energy, that means that, and actually other things will be more expensive as well, because your businesses, if you want to go out for a hamburger, their costs are higher. So all of those things are going to be more expensive. And so ultimately it starts to tap down you know, everyday people, you know, some of the comforts that they've had, they'll no longer be able to take, you know, maybe have extra money for their kids to go, you know, be on a soccer team or music lessons or things like that, because they're having to pay more for something so foundational, and that is the energy to heat their homes, their transportation, to turn the lights on. And so it'll start to tap down kind of a lot of the freedoms in their lives.
Well, yeah, I mean, I mentioned this point in passing that energy is an industry that powers every other industry. And part of what that means is that everything we face has embodied energy costs. So one of the statistics I've seen says the average hospital, half of its budget goes towards electricity. So if you think, well, man, do we want to make healthcare dramatically more expensive? Probably not. And then if you think, who bears the biggest burden of energy costs? Well, it's particularly the poor people. They spend a larger portion of their budget on energy costs. And so you think, like, so imagine, you know, if energy is going up significantly, it's not going to be that, like, Leonardo DiCaprio and Al Gore don't fly to Davos. It's going to be that, like, you know, the person making $30,000 a year isn't going to drive to Michigan to visit their grandparents for the holidays. Those are the kinds of sacrifices that are going to be called for. And I think that's the real tragedy here, that people who advocate a carbon tax don't really take seriously.
Well, and you know, the idea that this is more expensive for, like you say, the everyday person and the people that are out there, like an Al Gore or a Leonardo DiCaprio, it seems like they still are flying around. They're still heating their homes. They have all this electricity. And so I have to ask, if they were really serious about it, it seems to me like they might make some lifestyle changes if they really believed in what they were saying. I know that may be kind of a, you know, I don't know if you want to comment on that or not, but it seems like their actions don't set up with their words.
Well, but hypocrisy is not that interesting, except what it reveals is that there are these enormous benefits from fossil fuels that are not being acknowledged, so that even the people who attack them the most can't or refuse to escape them. Because, yeah, if you really thought these were destroying the planet, then you would basically go live in a self-sustaining farm. You couldn't take part in our country in any way, in our society, because it is a fossil fuel society. But what I want to see them do is not be consistent anti-fossil fuel advocates. I want to see them stop trying to stop others from using fossil fuels. So it's yes, they should keep flying all around the world, and then they should stop flying around the world to tell people to stop using fossil fuels on a much smaller scale.
Well done, Don Watkins. Well done on that. One other thing I wanted to mention, and that was the poor. You said the energy costs, you know, really affect the poor, the working class, the most, because then a bigger portion of their dollars have to go to energy. And this was probably 10 or 15 years ago. You know, when I kind of started to think about this, I was seeing that from our power company, Public Service Colorado, that you could give money to a energy assistance program for people that might be having trouble paying their bills. And I'm thinking, and you know, Americans typically are very generous people, and certainly we want people to have energy. But I'm thinking, you know, I've seen these different policies that are pushing, I think, the cost of energy here in Colorado higher and higher. And many times, Public Service of Colorado has been involved in that. Like, they're shutting down some of our clean coal plants, which is going to make energy more expensive. And then on the other hand, they're asking people to give money to assist the poor because they're making energy more expensive. It seemed to me like it was kind of a circular firing squad to me. Your comments on that, Don?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just always this pattern of that government intervention creates problems that then the people who want government intervention say, well, we have to solve with more government intervention. So, you know, we talked about healthcare costs. I would argue that the reason that they're so out of control in this country is because of government intervention in healthcare. And what's the solution? Well, it's always let's have the government take over more. So I think whenever you're seeing this pattern of somebody demanding government control in order to solve a problem, you should investigate and say, well, what really is the source of the problem? And if it's, wow, there was government flaws here, like restricting energy that's driving up the cost of energy, maybe the solution is get rid of those restrictions instead of give the government more power.
Okay. We're going to run out of time here. And so I wanted to ask you this question. And that is, here in Denver, sometimes we will have, just kind of because of conditions, we're up against the mountains. We used to have a very, very bad brown cloud. But the other day, I did see a little bit of a brown cloud over Denver. And immediately, people are saying, more regulations. We've got to do more. What would your comment be to people that were concerned about that when they saw that, you know, in the skies of Denver the other day?
I mean, I don't know the details, but there's definitely a role for government for helping control pollution and setting proper thresholds of emissions and things like that. But you always do it in the context of what's overall beneficial for human life. And so what you can't do is try to eliminate side effects at the cost of starving yourself of energy.
Okay. And, you know, my story is one of energy poverty, or my family story, from energy poverty to energy abundance. And, you know, it's an amazing life that we get to live. I mean, I get to get in a nice warm car. I get to drive over here to the station. We have all kinds of equipment here that a lot of it is petroleum based. You know, my phone, they're just making an iPhone. You know, there's a lot of petroleum products in that. The clothes that we wear, you know, your Patagonia jackets, a lot of that has petroleum based products in it. But just two generations ago, Don Watkins, my grandmother grew up in a two-room sod house. She had, I think it was five or six brothers or sisters. And they basically had energy poverty. I mean, they had to go out and find, you know, dung and sticks and things to, you know, to heat the home and to be able to cook over that. And a sod house, I mean, that's pretty affordable housing if you get right down to it. And so what's happened in two generations? Why is it that her granddaughter gets to live the life that she lives? I submit it's because of fossil fuels, because of reliable and efficient and affordable energy. Don Watkins, your comment.
Yeah, I agree completely, and I would say wider. It's the freedom to use fossil fuels, and more broadly, freedom as such, because when you have freedom in capitalism, people are allowed to put their ideas into action, and the number one most powerful way that we can accelerate the power of our ideas and the power of our action is through affordable energy, and that we've owed overwhelmingly to fossil fuels, and I think we'll continue to well into the future.
Well said, Don. So how can people get more information about the work that you're doing?
The best thing for them to do is go to industrialprogress.com, where they can sign up for a newsletter and find out more about the book and about our podcast, Power Hour.
Okay, great. Well, Don Watkins, thank you so much. You are the Director of Education Center for Industrial Progress. This show is brought to you by Liberty Oilfield Services because, as you mentioned, there's so much focus on the negatives of fossil fuels. We want to make sure that people understand how hydrocarbons actually have helped us be healthier, help us to thrive and prosper. So, Don Watkins, thank you so much.
Been a pleasure.
Okay, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we will be chatting with Congressman Ken Buck. He sits on the House Judiciary Committee, and it looks like today Jerry Nadler, who is the head of that committee, will be, starting to look at these whole impeachment proceedings. And so we want to find out from Congressman Buck what is going on exactly there. So we're going to go to break. This is Kim Munson. It's the Kim Munson Show. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Denver, and the historic 88 Drive-In Theater for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today at kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com, spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me there at kim@kimmunson.com and be sure and sign up for our newsletter. Thrilled to have on the line with me Congressman Ken Buck. He sits on the House Judiciary Committee, and it's going to get interesting today there, Ken. What's going to be happening?
Well, we're going to have a hearing today on impeachment, and the Democrats have three law professors, constitutional experts coming in, and we have one witness, and Jonathan Turley, who is a law professor at George Washington University. So the questioning will be about what is an impeachable offense, and I think it's going to be an interesting hearing.
Okay, so the Democrats are bringing in three professors. My understanding is they're going to try to explain what high crimes and misdemeanors mean. Is that right?
Well, I think they have one. So the Constitution says treason, bribery, high crimes, or misdemeanors. I think they have one bribery theory, and then the others would fall under high crimes and misdemeanors. But yes, they will be explaining that clause of the Constitution, or at least trying to match that clause to the facts that have been developed by the Intelligence Committee.
Okay, so how many people sit on this committee with you, Ken?
Oh, I haven't counted lately, but my guess is there are probably about 35.
Okay, and so will you all be able to ask these professors questions?
The process for today is the chairman and the ranking member will each have an opening statement of 5 minutes, and then the Democrats will have 45 minutes to ask questions, the chairman and counsel, and then the Republican leader, Doug Collins from Georgia, will have 45 minutes with counsel, and then each member will have 5 minutes, and it alternates back and forth between a Democrat member and a Republican member, 5 minutes to ask questions.
So what's your thoughts on what's going to happen today, Ken?
I think that, it's going to be very interesting. The Democrats have not moved the polls on this issue. Most Americans are still very skeptical of this. They believe there's a lot of important work that's left to be done, and the Congress is really wasting time going down this path. It would be one thing if it was an oversight hearing, looking at the president's conduct or the conduct of the administration, but to label it impeachment from the beginning, I think, has been really problematic for the Democrats. So I think what you're going to see today is an effort to match the law with the facts. I think that the bottom line is this is a stretch for impeachable conduct. It may not be conduct that we aspire to in this country, but it is certainly not a high crime or misdemeanor or bribery as the founders intended it. And I think that if the Democrats take the Constitution and use it in this way, it really sets a bad precedent for the future.
Well, and my question is Joe Biden was actually on recorded. I mean, there's a video of him saying that he said to the Ukrainians that if you don't do this, you're not going to get the money. I mean, he said that. And so I can't quite figure out how he's getting a pass. He and his son was sitting on the board of Burisma. I mean, I don't understand how he's getting a pass, but yet over here, there's this movement to try to impeach Trump. I don't understand how we can match those up, Congressman Buck.
Well, I agree with you, and I think that the Democrats have controlled the narrative in the House. They control who gets called as witnesses, and they denied the Intelligence Committee Republicans the opportunity to call witnesses that would have highlighted those issues. They will do the same thing in the Judiciary Committee. But when it gets to the Senate, that won't be the case. The Republicans will control the narrative in the Senate, The Republicans will decide who gets called and how long they testify, and that you will see if the House votes to impeach and it's sent to the Senate, and if the Senate takes it up, you will see a much, much different display set of hearings in the Senate.
Okay, Congressman Buck, you know, we know that everyday hardworking people, they don't have time to really delve into, you know, all of these details. They know something's going on. You see the headlines from the mainstream media. And many times those headlines are pushing forward a narrative that you mentioned facts. I'm not sure that I believe that some of the things that the Democrats are calling facts are facts. And I think everyday people, you know, they want to have honest, truthful debate, deliberation on something like this. And we're getting anything but that. It seems more like political theater. What do you think about that?
I think it is political theater, and I don't think it is a search for the truth. I was as you know, Kim, a prosecutor for 25 years, and I did engage in a search for the truth, and I listened to both sides, and I did my best to determine what actually happened, and then moved forward as a prosecutor in that regard. That's not what is happening in the United States House right now. There are some facts. The fact is that President Trump did call President Zelensky of the Ukraine, and there is a transcript, or at least a summary of a transcript of that conversation. And so there are some facts out there. Much of what has been elicited from witnesses is hearsay and speculation and really testimony that would not be admissible in a court of law and is largely incorrect. And that's really the problem that we deal with right now is when we try to apply the law to the facts, the Democrats say, well, the law is what we say it is. It doesn't have to be a statute. It doesn't have to be a crime that anyone can look up and find. But there is this amorphous idea that something wrong happened and therefore it's a high crime or misdemeanor. And then the other issue that we face is the facts. They aren't calling the witnesses. They aren't pursuing those witnesses in court. They aren't pursuing the documents in court. And it gives them the opportunity to create their own set of facts.
Uh-huh. Okay. So the fact is that actually President Trump did have a conversation with the Ukrainian leader. There is that fact. But there's a couple of other things that I think mainstream media doesn't let people know. And my understanding is that President Clinton had signed that there had been a agreement signed with the Ukrainians back when Clinton was president that said if they thought that there might be any kind of corruption, that they had an agreement that we would check that out. And so what Trump was looking for, to my understanding, is that there was and one of our listeners just texted me. She said that this was very appropriate behavior for President Trump, that $5 billion of tax money is missing. And so wouldn't it be a responsible leader to try to figure out what was going on? At least that's my understanding of what was going on in that phone call, Congressman Buck.
Absolutely. It's important to and I think the president made it clear in private meetings before this whistleblower account came out. He made it absolutely clear that he was focused on corruption, and that the corruption involved all areas of the Ukrainian government. There's a report out that 68% of Ukrainians have given a bribe to a public official to get a public service. It's unbelievable the level of corruption that exists in that country. And frankly, President Zelensky ran on the platform of reforming the country's government system, that he was seeking to reduce corruption. So that in that sense, it was a very legitimate phone call between the president and the President Trump and the president of the Ukraine. Where it gets off track is when the president of Ukraine mentions, and President Zelensky mentioned at first, mentions the Rudy Giuliani, and then President Trump follows up with a conversation about the Bidens. And that is really where it moves from a very legitimate line of inquiry to something that is less legitimate, that could appear to be meddling or inviting meddling in the U.S. election. Now, I have to tell you, based on the quotes from other leaders in the U.S. government, I don't think that was what was happening, and I don't think that rises to the level of impeachment. That's something that the voters can decide in November of 2020, whether it was appropriate, inappropriate, and whether it matters so much that you don't want to vote for President Trump. I don't think the Democrats would be engaged in this activity, this impeachment activity, if they believed that they were going to defeat President Trump in 2020. I think they understand that he is going to be reelected, and the only way of getting him out of office is to try to dirty him up in this process.
Well, I think one of your colleagues, Congressman from Texas, had said that if we don't impeach this president, then he very well may be reelected. And so I think that you've really kind of hit the nail on the head. The other thing, and Ken, you probably can't comment on this because, of your position. But it seems to me that if the Bidens had done nothing wrong, that they would be out there saying, we have done nothing wrong. But instead, we're seeing this whole impeachment process going on, and so I find it all suspect. And then one other quick comment. My understanding is that the House, the Democrats, changed the rules on whistleblowers, that they didn't have to have firsthand knowledge or firsthand witnessing of a conversation. It could be second or third hand, and that was changed shortly before these proceedings started. Is that true?
I don't know about that. I do know that this whistleblower did not have firsthand knowledge. The whistleblower met with the staff of the Intelligence Committee and perhaps even the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, before reporting, which is not an appropriate procedure. He's supposed to report first to the Inspector General before meeting with anybody in Congress. And so the process was flawed with the whistleblower.
Okay. Well, Congressman Buck, thank you so much. Good luck today. I appreciate you giving us an update, and let us, keep us in the loop on that.
Thank you very much. Take care.
You bet. And our quote for today is Galileo. He said, in questions of science, the authority of 1,000 is not worth the humble reasoning of a single individual. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically. Strive for high ideals and, like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.